Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Christ, lads, just Pagliacci face it up and sell the bloody pay-per-view.
Right on that Hoover, that one!
Yuckity-yuck, McMannequin!
The British Bulldog is part of the new generation!
You may all bow before D-Mabel!
Here comes the Jackknife!
On lives the new generation and the World Wrestling Federation!
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review. As the other Cultaholic lads ruminate over Impact Wrestling Rebellion, we are here via our IcaPro powered DeLorean, contemplating maybe quitting before King of the Ring. Who be we? Oh, jeez. I be fake Geordie radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion, and advocate to Pablo Tom Campbell. I am with the bear in the big blue bar cage, Titan Shrugged. The head pen of Cultaholic doesn't need a pencil. He gets it right every time. He's Justin Henry from Off of America.
I warned you.
You did warn me, mate. You really did. Sent me a lovely message as we were planning this recording today saying this is the worst go home for a pay-per-view I've ever seen. And we've been watching in 2021. So I was all ready for this one after you dropped that warning my way.
It wasn't a go home, it was a stay home.
It was a go home, you're drunk.
To say the very least.
I'll tell you what I did, and I haven't told you this off air. I'll tell you this on air. Now, do you know what I did about 2 hours before we spoke today? Do you know what I did?
Contemplated doing this show?
I did contemplate doing this show. And I thought, yes, I will do it. But I tell you what I did that I'm surprised I haven't done before. I have ordered actual physical copies of the Titan trilogy.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So you were just mooching a free copy off somebody else for a while?
I was reading. Well, no, I had like the Kindle version. I had a Kindle version, but I'd like proper physical ones to have in my possession.
I understand.
So I have amended that, and they're on the way tomorrow, which is very exciting.
Oh, God bless you, Tom.
And I tell you what, I've been spending a lot of money I haven't got lately, because not only did I buy the Titan trilogy, not only did I buy a new pet toy for Pablo, but I bought this, which I'm shaking in front of the screen. You can't see it.
Hang on. God, Slam Jam.
There it is. There it is. The WWF Superstars Slam Jam, the cassette tape, which...
You know, Robin Williams once said that cocaine is God's way of saying you have too much money.
He was wrong.
I would amend that. Owning the Slam Jam album.
Well, I won't be owning it much longer because one unlucky person who listens to the Classic Raw review will be owning it. So, I bought this based on a conversation Justin Henry and I had during a show. It was mid-episode that I thought, you know what? I'm going to sink some money into the eBay machine and I'm going to purchase Slam Jam on cassette. And I don't want to keep it. I would like to give it to you along with a goodie bag, a little collection of other Cultaholic-based things. So...
They said about Ebola. I don't want to keep it, but I'd rather just give it away.
Exactly. I'm sharing it with the world. I'm sharing Ebola with the world. So, here's the plan, right? Someone's winning this copy of Slam Jam on cassette. If you would like it, I mean, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? Simple way to win. I want you to jump onto iTunes or the Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. say something nice about what we do, or lies, as long as there's five stars in there. Just pretend we do every podcast from the Tokyo Dome. I would like a five-star review on the Apple Podcasts server from yourself. Drop me a message on Twitter or Facebook or email via the usual channels to let me know that you've done it. And somebody next week will be getting themselves a copy of Slam Jam on cassette. How's that, eh? Bit of all you have to do is say something nice about us and you get something horrible.
You scratch my back, I'll stab yours. Is that what this says?
It's basically, you scratch my back, I will give you Slam Jam, the cassettes. So do your review. Let us know you've done it. You can print screen it or just drop me an email, tom.campbell@cultaholic.com, or tweet me at Tom Campbell, or tweet Justin at JRH Writing. And next week, we'll announce somebody's winning Slam Jam and a few bits of Cultaholic tat as well. That seems like the nicest way to do it. It won't be tat. It'll be mainly nice things, I think. I think so anyway. But hey, look, that's what we're doing. That's next week. Let's crack on with this week now whilst you're thinking about how brilliant your five-star review is going to be. Where and when are we for Monday Night Raw this week, Justin?
Well, we've come to the end of the road for this taping. It is Monday, June 19th, 1995, which would have been the first Raw I watched during summer vacation that year. It was taped 2 weeks earlier from the high school in Struthers, Ohio. So a new cycle begins after the pay-per-view, but first we got to get through the pay-per-view.
We have got the warmed-up cold cuts heading into a hot mess at Keith the Ring 1995, which we will indeed be doing a watch along with next week. It'll be myself, Justin Henry, and one Sam Driver, who promised to join us. It was a blood oath. He will be here to do the King of the Ring watch along with us, and you'll hear that next week on the Cultaholic podcast feed.
Yeah. Tell the truth, I'm threatened to withhold his pay.
Maybe. I may have struck a deal. He may have tried to find excuses. We have since come to an agreement whereby it is in his job description to do it.
we had to get somebody.
Exactly. He is a hot, warm body that we have decided to drag into our fetid hell. So before we get there, we've got one more episode of Monday Night Raw to get to. And you know it's going to be a belter when, as we said at the beginning, Justin Henry drops you a message just before you start watching it going, this is awful. It's bad. You know it's going to be good. You know it's going to be good. But I'm sat there having my dinner and Justin drops me a message saying, this week's episode's bad. Oh, bro, I can't wait to polish off this spaghetti bolognese and get watching.
I was watching it during dinner on Saturday, trying to enjoy my grilled cheeseburgers that I made. And, well, it would have been nice if I had to sit through this bile.
Did you make them from scratch?
No, I bought them. That's all right.
It's all right. It's all right. That's very nice. Nicely done. Stick them under the grill. What do you have on them? Do you have a bit of cheese, a bit of onion, a bit of
A little bit of lettuce. Pepper jack cheese, some bacon.
Lovely, that is. I'm just trying to stall for as long as I possibly can before we start talking. Oh, I know what will stall. Let's talk about the week in the wrestling news. Let's make this last 2 hours. That's fine. So the Great American Bash happened. WCW's Great American Bash, June the 18th, 1995. According to David Meltzer, WCW puts on one of its best pay-per-view shows in more than 7 months with the Great American Bash. It must have been a rough 7 months for WCW.
Yeah, that's probably fair.
The show started with an angle on the live main event, like the kickoff show. Weirdly, WCW used to call their kickoff show the main event, which sends the wrong message.
Hold on. They had a Sunday evening show on TBS called the main event.
Ah, that makes more sense.
And on Sunday nights, it was like Heat before pay-per-view.
Right. That makes much more sense now. So
now you know the rest of the story.
The main event, the pre-main event, the pre-show, main show, main event, main event. It started off with an angle that featured Vader attacking Nick Bockwinkle and Eric Bischoff. Hulk Hogan then turns up. They're separated and Vader's like, oh, let's go right now. Let's fight right now. And Hogan's like, yeah, let's fight tonight. Let's fight tonight. They don't fight on the pay-per-view at all.
There's a reason for that.
Go on.
Hogan was only contractually obligated to appear on a certain number of pay-per-views. Hogan does not appear on a pay-per-view at all. So it's an angle on main event to set up Bash at the Beach for the next month.
But I have objection with the way they did it because it very much made you believe, oh, we're adding an extra match to the pay-per-view.
Last minute buy.
Yeah, well, that's just, that's, which is a worse bait and switch? That or that car ran over Austin?
Well, that wasn't really a bait and switch. There was a driver.
That's true.
It wasn't a self-driven car. That would have been a bait and switch.
Austin runs himself over. There's a pop star in the UK that did that. The story is, I think it was Brian Harvey from E17. He was driving home one night, and he was a fair few sheets to the wind, and he opened his car door as he was driving, and he fell out of his car and ran himself over. Which is an amazing skill, if you can do it.
Did he live?
Yeah. And he went on to make more music. I don't want to say great music, because E17 peaked with Keep On Moving, in my opinion.
That's more impressive than the time that I lost my sock after my shoe was already on. I was 12. I have no idea how that happened.
That's amazing. I'm trying to think how that would have happened.
It still haunts me to this day.
Oh. Are you sure you had the sock on to begin with? Oh. Next time on Unsolved Mysteries, how did Justin Henry lose his sock whilst his shoe was on?
I'm going to need a more Robert Stack-like voice. A young man from New Jersey playing with his friends one day suddenly realizes that his sock is missing.
That's it. That's the series. That's the series.
It's chilling. Haunting.
So let's take a look at the rest of this card for Great American Bash. Hopefully no one lost their socks. Harlem Heat beat the Fantastics on the main event of 646. How many stars?
Wait, the Fantastics were there in 95. No one told me.
Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton.
You just call him Bobby Rolton?
Tommy Rogers and Bobby Fulton.
Bobby Fulton, okay.
Big Fulton.
Two stars because the Fantastics are involved.
One and a half stars. Not bad.
Okay, that's an acceptable TV match.
Craig Pittman made Chris Kanyon submit in 2 minutes and 16. The camera missed the finish because they showed Paul White, one of the several giant signings, with the announcers going crazy like he was the biggest man they'd ever seen.
Well, it's hyperbole. That's how you do it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say this guy a crap ring, like a dud or whatever.
It was indeed a dud. Proper dudded. Then we had the Vader Hogan shenanigans, which we previously discussed. And then when we get to the show, this is the show now. Dick Slater and Bunkhouse Buck beat Frankie Lancaster and Barry Houston.
That wasn't on the pay-per-view.
That was main event then. Still main event.
I was going to say it's
the main event of main event, lest we forget.
That's got to be a dud, right?
No, it was minus a quarter of a star.
Oh, see, I try to give him the benefit of the doubt.
That's very good of you. Colonel Parker called Sherry a floozy. Sherry smacked him one, and this is leading to something hilarious between these two. Have we had the amnesia angle yet with Sherry?
Not quite. We're getting there, though.
Strap yourselves in! On the show now, Alex Wright beat Brian Pillman in 15 minutes and 26 seconds. Alex Wright, very heavily booed by the crowd. They've decided to turn him heel after this one. What do you reckon, star-wise, this was?
Well, come on. He beat Triple H and Stone Cold. He's got to be one of the best. and eventually beat Le Champion, so therefore he's one of the best of all time.
He certainly is, mate. What did Dave reckon to it?
I'm going to say 3.25.
Three and three quarters.
Ooh, I'm about to rewatch this match now.
Yeah, it's not a bad little match, actually. Dave Sullivan won an arm wrestling match from Diamond Dallas Page.
Please tell me Dave rated it.
He didn't know. He just said, quote, it was good for what it was.
Well, the angle was fine with DDP playing Savage and Sullivan playing George Steele and Kimberly playing Liz, doing that whole deal with, you know, just a simpleton oaf with a kind heart falling for the good-hearted girl who's with the bad guy. It was fine for what it was.
Pretty much what they thought it was. Jim Duggan beat Sergeant Pittman via disqualification. Now, Duggan subbing in for Marcus Bagwell, who was injured. And they go to a DQ in 8 minutes and 13.
This has to be a dud, right?
This is indeed a dud.
I just want to point out, 4 years from now, Duggan will again sub for Bagwell in a match with Berlin.
Is he just like the natural sub for Bagwell?
Yeah, because Bagwell wouldn't do the job for Berlin, so Duggan did it like the last minute.
Oh, God bless
you. Because he was running the asylum at the time.
What a time this is. Nonsense time. Harlem Heat beat Slater and Buck in 8:39.
So they worked twice, both teams? And Pittman worked twice?
Yeah.
Was there a slight delay? What's going on?
I'm not entirely sure. They just were working them hard all night.
One star for this match?
Nah, this was a dud as well.
Wow, and they've called this the best pay-per-view in months?
Yep.
Okay, keep firing.
I'm sure it'll get better from here. Renegade beat Arn Anderson to win the WCW television title in 9 minutes and 7 seconds.
Are you sure Dave wasn't being sarcastic?
I wonder whether he was.
It has to have a minus in front. Minus
it
one.
Does. Minus a quarter.
That's it?
Yeah.
That's a petty rating.
He says, Arn Anderson probably worked it about as well as I've ever seen anyone work in a negative star match.
Well, I wasn't really trying that hard. If you sit up next to Warrior, you have so much shit, you have to make two piles. In fairness to Renegade, he was pushed way too hard for what they wanted him to be.
Absolutely.
It's not his fault.
He went out there and he did the best he could do with the situation he was in. So one does not simply blame Renegade for this.
Exactly.
The Nasty Boys retained the WCW Tag Team titles, beating the Blue Bloods in 15:03.
1.5.
We're getting better. 2.25.
Okay, that's acceptable.
We're moving back. We're moving back up. It's getting better. Sting beat Meng to win the US title in 13:34.
5 7/8.
72-12. 2.5 for this one.
Oh, okay.
That's the number of men. And final main event, Ric Flair beat Randy Savage in 14:42.
3.5.
4 stars.
Okay, so this is actually... So a 4-star match, a 3 3/4 star match, a 2.5 and a 2. If that happened today, people call that a crappy middling show. Because it's not Wrestle Kingdom. It's just got to end with a 5-star match and a 4.5 star main event and a 4 1/4 star match before that. Otherwise, it's a bad show.
That's how it works. That's the system. That's the system.
For the love of God, people, like 2 means acceptable, 3 means good, 4 is great, 5 is all-time classic.
Mm-hmm. So 4 is a good way to end on.
They want to call Cody 3-star Cody. With three stars is a good match. If he has a good match, that's a compliment. Douches.
It's true, actually. I think people just assume if it's a 3-star match, then I guess it's one of those things where you're either the best or the worst. I think voting like declaring someone's 3-star Cody, calling him 3-star Cody, is seen as a dig because you're neither the best nor the worst. You're sort of slap bang in the middle. It's like being called bang average, isn't it?
Eh, him and Dustin was 5 stars.
Exactly. There's enough good stuff.
Exactly.
Staying with WCW, a bit of news based on what they've got going on. So
can
WCW.
We stay with them?
No, we have to watch Raw. An update on WCW Head to Head, which apparently it is still called, and it is still happening in like July, according to Dave. We know this doesn't happen, but let's play his game, like the silly rogue he is. They're trying out some announced combos for WCW Head to Head. Nancy Sullivan is in the mix for this one.
Interesting choice.
The only word we've gotten is to expect Eric Bischoff to host and for the show to have a totally new look on the announced teams. It could be Nancy Sullivan in the mix of it there. First show tentatively set for Sarasota, Florida, the day after Clash of the Champions from Daytona Beach. That's how it looks so far.
So that would have been August 7th, which would have made sense if they did it that way, but they wanted to go unopposed on Labor Day since Raw was off that week. So that makes sense too.
Mm-hmm. It is expected, according to Dave, the show will be done similar to Raw. 3 weeks will be taped at a time with the first week airing live. So a live show, 2 lots of tapings. Live show, 2 lots of tapings.
They didn't do that.
They didn't do that either.
We'll be live, so we can be fresh.
Yeah, I mean that what they did is more expensive, but far more sensible.
While we mentioned on Nitro here, quick shout out to the man who eventually did become color commentator, Steve Mongo McMichael, who we saw the troubling news the other day about him now going through ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, and I understand it ain't looking good for him, but at least he's kept his positive attitude and his sense of humor. We saw that interview and put on a really brave face during that, and just wish the best for him and his family.
There is a crowdfunder to support the family of Mongo McMichael during all this, and you can find the URL in the description of this podcast. We have talked on this podcast in glowing terms about Steve Mongo McMichael. I believe he should have been the man that headlined WrestleMania 11, and I will say that forever. And you know what? That, like, nothing but love to him. Genuinely a light in wrestling. And if you could support him any way you can, if you want to find out more, check the comments of the podcast or the description of this podcast. That'd be amazing. Thank you.
He's getting a lot of retroactive love for being a bit of a fish out of water in the business for just some of his unusual occurrences during matches. I mean, he was in his late 30s when he got into wrestling. So you weren't going to expect an all-time great wrestler, but he was compelling enough to have stood out. Mm.
What we got from that was great.
And that's one of the best things you could say about someone, I think.
There's so many people who I say should have definitely headlined WrestleMania.
Well, I know you say that.
Yeah.
I mean, you just don't like Lawrence Taylor, that's all.
I don't have an issue with Lawrence Taylor at all. I think that looking at it from a distance without the connection to who they are and what they stand for, if you were to look at the complete package of Lawrence Taylor, the complete package of Steve McMichael, and having not made a decision about WrestleMania, I think the sensible money would have been Mongo. I think.
If Mania were held in Chicago, I might have agreed with you. Because then you could put Walter Payton in this corner.
Oh, that'd have been a much better Mania.
And Fridge.
Oh my God, William Frederick Perry! Get him in there! Oh! That'd have been a better Mania! Yes!
That was one of the best teams ever, the 85 Bears.
Christ, that'd have been such a better Mania.
Have Mike Ditka manage him. With that big cigar in his mouth.
Bloody hell.
What could
have
been?
Absolute money. Absolute money. WCW is going to be going, is supposedly getting an upgraded production compared with WCW Saturday Night. There is talk of using more international outside talent as well to boost the product quality and hiring new producers for the TV show. They really want to throw a lot of money at this, Justin.
Oh, they definitely they came through on all those fronts. And we know very soon that three Cruiserweight Marvels, Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko, and Chris Benoit, will soon be brought in to be the, as Eddie described it in Bischoff's terms, the car crash in the middle of his movie.
And it changes the game completely when they arrive.
Absolutely.
So there's some exciting stuff coming from Nitro very, very soon. Well, WWE head-to-head, rather.
Head-to-head. Let's say, what the hell is Nitro?
What's a Nitro doing in the Impact Zone? Vince McMahon was interviewed this week, and it was a spicy chat that he had with Chet Kopech Sports Channel.
Chet Kopech. There's a name from the past.
What is your understanding and experience of Chet Kopech?
Chet Kopech was a sports host in Chicago. He was kind of one of those pompous on-air personalities. He actually has a wrestling connection besides this. He was the ring announcer for the Chicago portion of WrestleMania 2. And he was also, he did radio WWF commentary with Monsoon for WrestleMania 10. You actually see him at ringside.
Wow. So he's a wrestling guy.
He's more of a mainstream, unpredetermined sports guy. Mm-hmm. But he has these connections to wrestling, and he has a media outlet. So, of course, Vince wants to use that for his own gain. And Chet Kopech got in trouble many years later for making a bit of an anti-Semitic remark on his show. And I think that was kind of like spell the end of his time as a mainstream guy.
Okay. Well, he's in the pocket of Vince at this point in time. And Vince is on to plug the charity work that WWF does. And, of course, plug the King of the Ring. But while he's there, he's going to take the Michael a little bit out of the competition. So Chad Kopech is asking a lot of questions. He asks about Doink the Clown. Now, in the Observer this week, they reference Doink the Clown and say there's no real plans for him to do anything now other than pop on TV so often and lose. So the bloom is off the rose, and the rose is full of water with Doink the Clown. It looks as if he's on the way out. But when asked about characters like Doink the Clown, Vince McMahon says, "We like characters like Doink for merchandising and marketing reasons." And he basically says, "Look, we're a kids show and we like making money from families." McMahon kept pushing that his wrestling, which he went back to his old line of saying there aren't pro wrestling but sports entertainment, was non-violent. He talked about his drug policy being the envy of other sports. All right, pal. He said...
what he meant was, we envy the fact that you can get away with having such a light policy.
Yeah.
But we may have to suspend a famous athlete or two for some bit of malfeasance, non-compliance.
I like that. That's exactly what he meant. He did a big Agatha wink to the camera as he said that. He said that WCW is making a big mistake in inciting a Monday Night War going head-to-head with Raw. He said that Turner can package wrestling, but has no idea how to package it creatively and has no idea how to correctively sell Hogan. In fact, while I'm here, says Vince, Hulk Hogan didn't tell the truth about me during the steroid trial. He said something to the effect, Hogan, of that Savage's jump to WCW was like jumping off a ledge as a career move. He said that... Savage was more honest than Hogan, despite this, who he had also knocked as being past his prime. So he just takes some digs at everybody here. Ted Turner, Randy Savage, Hulk Hogan, the WCW head-to-head. Vince little rattled here, do you think?
Well, it's a good thing the King of the Ring is not being most heavily pushed by a 43-year-old wrestler who has a prosthetic foot in his hands. Oh. I'm sorry, he's actually older than 43. He's like 45 at this point.
That we're going to get into that. In fact, we're going to get into that right now. That brings you up to speed with the world of wrestling. Justin, take us through Raw, please.
So, it must be stated again that this is the go-home show for one of the big five pay-per-views. When there's a go-home show, you want to make sure that the home audience is so tempted by what they've seen that they have to plunk down money to watch this show. You want to enthrall them. You want to entice them. You want to intrigue them. This show is going to...
You want to hold them. You want to squeeze them. Then you got to show a little tenderness.
You know, usually I'm happy stalling. But this time I just want to get through it as fast as I can.
Fine.
I feel like I'm running through a minefield carrying somebody.
You carry me, mate.
All right, get on my back. Let's do this.
Hey. On. Mush.
So, this show not only made me not want to see King of the Ring, it made me not want to watch this company anymore. And this was 26 years ago. See, because they're trying to sell the consumer on buying this show, which, near as I could tell, has no title matches, has an 8-man tournament with a bit of a wonky field, a Kiss My Foot match, and a tag team main event where 3/4 of the guys haven't been booked very strongly.
Is there a Kiss My Foot match on the pay-per-view?
Amazingly, I checked, and yes.
Oh, because they hadn't mentioned it at all.
I know
they were too busy They were too busy talking about the WWF champion to even mention there was a Kiss My Foot match.
I just did some quick research. I pulled up the buy rate history of WWE. This was the least bought pay-per-view to that point.
Good.
I'm not even qualifying a statement with like a category. That is just 150,000 buys. WrestleMania did 340.
Good.
Rumble did 225.
They deserve it. They deserved it.
The prior record holder was Survivor Series 93 at 180.
I mean, with that one, at least they tried.
They did?
They tried more than they tried here.
Oh, okay, that's a fair point. So, keep that in mind, the fact that this is a go-home show while we go along here. We start off cold with Undertaker's theme song. The crowd and the Heat Machine are both happy. Meanwhile, we hear the graveyard overture of the famed Man in Black himself as he heads down the aisle. Vince, meanwhile, begins a show-long pattern of promoting what he thinks is the most important part of Sunday's pay-per-view, That is the smell of Jerry Lawler's feet. And you think I cannot state this enough. You may think I'm exaggerating this a bit. Every 3 minutes, probably every 2 minutes, maybe even every 1 minute, there was some reference to the smell of Lawler's feet, or Lawler making fun, Lawler mocking Brett and his family, or just, the point is, Lawler and Brett got the most hype of anything on Sunday's pay-per-view. Anything.
Actually, now, you know what? Now, Lawler's feet got the biggest hype. Lawler's feet got more hype than Brett in that match. Brett did a promo for it, granted, but Lawler's feet is the seller here. Lawler's feet.
So, if I had this right, the hype for the pay-per-view basically amounted to, hey, if you kids want to see Lawler's feet covered in horse shit, you better order the pay-per-view.
Yep. This is what it was. This was the hype. All show long. Now, when the show started cold, Graveyard Overture, Undertaker coming out, I kind of went, all right, maybe Justin was wrong. Like, we're starting with The Undertaker. This is good. It's all right. And then within 30 seconds, Vince is talking about Jerry Lawler's feet as Undertaker's coming out. And I was like, ah, no. I forgot we're still pushing this. Bollocks. All show long.
There are a lot of foot puns I didn't bother to write down because who has the time? Made it through the night, but let me just say, I'll make one of my own right here. They really stepped in it with this one.
Do you know what? There's actually less foot puns than there were last week. Like at one point, like Jerry Lawler misses an own goal where he starts saying, I'm going to play some footage, and he misses an own goal. It's all we hear is how, like you said, how bad Jerry Lawler's feet smell. Like, this is a wrestling podcast, by the way. If this is your first time here, I'm sorry. The whole show is just like, oh, they smell. Oh, those feet smell. Ah, smelly. Yeah, Vince. Wait till
45 minutes of that.
Wait till Brett eats them. Yeah, they smell. That's all the show is. Christ. Wrestling!
45 minutes down of foot-related material. We mentioned before that I especially, as a kid, would get really self-conscious if something really bad was happening on a wrestling show and my mom or dad walked into the room, like, Doink is wrestling, and like why is there a clown in the wrestling ring, Jelson? This is one of those shows where you're just embarrassed to be a fan. But that isn't to say anything of the wrestling, which is mostly fine on this show. It is what it is. It's just a show of squashes and one feature bout that I'll have something to say about. But it is an incessant amount of foot talk. So the big draw is the odor of Lawler's feet as we finally hit the opening bit. They make sure to hammer toe that home.
Justin's been heavily affected by this episode of Raw.
I've been traumatized. So, Undertaker versus Mike McReynolds. I've never seen Mike McReynolds before. I've never seen him since. But he looks like 1995 Stevie Richards. It is uncanny.
He was. So, he had a good look. Good look about him. He looks strong.
Yeah, he looks like your typical white meat baby face, except he's playing chum for Taker here. And Taker does the Ludwig Borga thing where he just walks across the ring while the song's still playing and starts punching the guy.
I assume they were feuding. Because Undertaker has a real issue with Mike McReynolds. He's not his normal stoic self in this match.
You probably confuse him for Bundy.
Has Undertaker lost all depth perception? That's yes. Definitely Bundy.
See, when the urn gets stolen, that's what happens. He has that facial blindness thing.
We have got to talk about... There's one spot in this match.
I know where you're going.
Mm-hmm.
Would this be when Taker goozled him around the neck and it was half choke slam, half choke toss, and he couldn't decide which one he wanted to do, so we did both?
Yeah, it was... what the flipping heck are you doing? Like, Undertaker, okay, who normally knows the crack, like, couldn't decide whether he was, as you say, choke slam or choke toss. I'll kind of half do both and see what Mike does.
Yeah, you know, the move they do where you grab him by the throat, Taker does this a lot, and launches him backwards at the corner, and they'd fly back like they've been hit with a gamma ray or something. And Tinker can also chokeslam people. We've seen him do it many times. Well, he's about 5 feet from the corner. He's got McReynolds by the neck. He looks like he's going to go for the choke toss, gets him up. And somewhere there's a miscommunication or a brain fart or whatever. So Tinker kind of just throws him slash chokeslams him at the same time. And McReynolds doesn't not really sure how to take this bump because he kind of just lands. he can't fight gravity. He just lands.
It's just a mess. Just a hot mess. I don't know who was in the wrong there.
It was what it was, but the important thing is we have feet jokes in the background.
Oh, thank goodness. I was worried.
To distract us from McReynolds' wonky landing there. So Tigger does some moves I never see him do, which Oklahoma Stampede into the corner, Tree of Woe spot. It's like he's busting out some offense here. And after that, we get the proper choke slam done the right way.
Even then, it doesn't look quite... It doesn't look as polished as it normally does.
Not only that, but the tombstone that follows, McReynolds isn't sure where to put his arms.
Jeez!
And you see him like, overly, like trying to like figure out what we're supposed to be doing.
Is there like when these two wrestling? Is there like a delay, like a buffering between them both, which is why this is happening? Because it just seems like they're very out of sync.
Forget different pages. They're in. I think they're reading different books here. Roman Reynolds is just that inexperienced. Which I probably chalk up to that, just being probably have a lot of matches under his belt, and he's maybe a little nervous being on TV with the freaking Undertaker. It happens.
Messy.
We see the Creatures of the Night at ringside. They move to a different seat at this taping. One looks like Brent Spiner.
Is that the same guy you said last week he looked like?
That's who he looks like. He looks like Brent Spiner.
Do you think it is him? How old would our boy Brett have been at this point?
Well, he was still in the midst of probably that Star Trek run, wasn't he? He was still playing Data.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking because I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember when he was Data in Star Trek. He was... Nah, the more I think about it. I'm going to pull up a little picture of him.
You know, it's funny while you're pulling that up. There's a rumor for years that those two, now you've seen what they look like, and you kind of have it in your mind right now what these two creature fans look like. There's a rumor for years that these two were Shane and Stephanie. Doesn't that just sound absurd? They look nothing like them.
That is funny.
First off, he wasn't sweating.
Yeah, for one, distinct lack of sweat on exactly. That man. And the other one, blatantly... She would have been too busy starting the Women's Revolution. So she hasn't got time to sit ringside.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's been busy cutting promos on people in the head and not having them get revenge on her.
Exactly. She's got a lot on. She's got to sit around.
So meanwhile, Vince is still selling the feet. Which I think it's putting it mildly. And Tinker, for some reason, remember, he's a babyface here. He body bags McReynolds, which is, that body bag is actually nicer. Other than what Mickey James was sent over the week.
Hefty, hefty, hefty.
And then Tinker, after he body bags McReynolds, runs off the ropes, and jumps up and stomps him while he's laying there.
What's going on? Why is Undertaker just sitting there, suddenly decided tonight I'm going to be an asshole to this enhancement guy?
He's like, you'll pay for this, Nikolai.
Undertaker just thinks he's everybody.
Yes, Tigger has them. Because the urn's gone now, he has facial blindness.
Is that what this is? Is it? Ah, that makes sense.
And torso blindness.
It's the lack of urn in it. Of course it is.
That's got to be what it is.
Because the urn is what kept him in control. And now he's not.
It's the opposite of they live.
They're dead.
Now he can't see anything. It's a they live, it's we're alive, pal.
That makes sense now, though. He hasn't got the urn, so he's all radio rental.
So we got some hype for what's coming up later on in the show. We got Tatanka and Sid versus the Head Shrinkers. We get a promo from Diesel on Bam Bam, and I can't wait to get to that.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Lawler's still on his rubber foot, and he cuts a semi-serious promo on Brett, which that part was fine. Because Lawler say what you will about Jerry Lawler, but he is such a pro that when he cuts like a vehement, focused promo, he could sell you on almost anything. He almost made me want to see this match because he wasn't making the dumb jokes. He was just talking about just how good it would be to just humiliate Brett one more time, and how he reveled in the idea of doing it. That was fine.
If the only hype for Brett versus Lawler had been that, even with the prosthetic foot or the feet on show, that would have been fine. If that had been all tonight. But it wasn't all, was it?
No, this is...
No.
Overkill. Mm. Overkill.
Oh, God. Look what it's done to you, Justin.
Yes, I know. Meanwhile, we see Tigger carrying McReynolds away. He's going to send him to Mickey's house. Give some for Nick Aldis to put his Kingsland cloverleaf on.
Don't know why I are Nick Aldis. I've interviewed him twice and I think he's now been mates. Are we mates now, Nick? Are we mates now?
Yeah. So, at what point does Kenny Omega show up at NWA and challenge Nick Aldis?
Oh my God, that would be stunning. I'm down for that.
I mean, that's the next move, right?
Oh my God. I am so down for that.
Where he goes to MLW and challenges Fatu.
Oh yes! Just take him off, sod it. I love it. I'm not even mad. I'm not even mad if Omega wins all the major world championships at this point.
I'm not even mad. You know what should happen?
What?
Omega and the Good Brothers should find R-Truth on the street and just beat him up and take the 24/7 title away.
Yes! Oh, just kick down all the doors. That'd be so good.
Or just pay him off in advance and say, like, hey, Ron, you know, how would we just act like this is a real thing and then we get some headlines?
It would. Like, it would.
I'm not advocating actually jumping that guy. That'd be terrible.
He'd probably get R-Truth fired. But
you can't fire R-Truth.
Oh.
It's a crowd favorite.
He's a real crowd pleaser. But I love the Omega. Yeah, I would love Omega walking out onto that soundstage with all those belts over his shoulder and going, yeah, Nick is that one.
Ultimo Omega.
This isn't even my final form.
And then Dragon comes out with all 10 belts he had in 96, and we have the ultimate match for like 20 belts.
Oh, somebody literally will not be able to walk for belts. Somebody will have to hire people to carry the belts for them.
That's why he has Gallows.
Gallows and Anderson can carry some. That's kind of them.
Speaking of world tours and stuff with global impacts, we have the Tour de Force dates. Now, last week we had a bit of a laugh because they were promoting a Tuesday show in Germany to fans in America.
Yeah.
So what's on the agenda this week?
This week it is the Point in Dublin, Ireland, followed by the NEC in Birmingham and the Royal Albert Hall in London. And then nip back.
Stop right there real fast. So we're doing the same problematic thing. We're trying to sell American fans on a show in Dublin for the following day, which is hilarious enough. And then we have a show for a city that I've never heard of in my life. Kiamisha Lake, New York.
I was going to ask you what this one was called. What this one was Dublin? About. No, Kiamisha.
No, hold on. I'm numbering. Dublin, Birmingham, London, Kiamisha Lake.
One of these things is not like the other.
If I had to do a Sporkle game, right, and name every city in New York State, I'd get 75 of them, and I never even thought of Kiamisha Lake because I've never heard of it before or since.
Isn't it indicative, though, of the pulling power of the WWF on a worldwide level? Because, like, as somebody from the UK, the Point in Dublin, big venue, the NEC, pretty much until like the National Indoor Arena came along, anybody that did a gig in the West Midlands or the Midlands either does the Capital Arena in Nottingham or the NEC in Birmingham. Arguably, NEC Birmingham is better because it is connected to Birmingham International Airport. So therefore, you get off the plane at Birmingham Airport, there's like a long corridor of about 20 minutes once you're through to, arrivals and all that jazz. It's a 20-minute corridor that then takes you to the NEC. So chances are they would have landed at Birmingham and just done that nice little walk. Some hotels on that run as well. It's perfect. Then the Royal Albert Hall in London, legendary venue. And then back in New York, just back of the bollocks New Jersey or wherever, because there's no draw. They haven't got the draw power in those bigger places, it seems.
Well, in America, they're burned out, but in the UK, they're still kind of fresh.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We're starving for wrestling.
It's not UK, but...
No, but even so, still starving for wrestling. So the difference this... I think the difference this time, because I know we went, why are they promoting a Germany show? Why is Stephanie Wynn doing a Germany show? At least with this week, like Sky Sports or Sky One will have carried WWF Raw. So you would have heard... Okay. The Todd Pettingill's voiceover for that. Sadly, they wouldn't have dubbed it over with a plucky, plummy British accent, which would have been fun. Come to see the wrestling. And here's the Undertaker with a chokeslam. They didn't do that, sadly. So we would have got Vince and Jerry Lawler's foot fetish talk for the entire week. But it made more sense then, because if you were sat watching the WWF and like I was living in Worcester, and they put up an advert for a show in Birmingham in 2 days' time, like, whoa, yeah, let's go. Let's go to Birmingham. Maybe.
I'm looking at the cards for those shows, and not the most inspiring events.
It's the same. It's the same cards as they had in Germany, in Essen, and in Frankfurt last week.
Oh, same Birmingham card. Got a 13-minute match between the Smoking Guns and Eli and Jacob Blue.
What? Oh, Birmingham, we're gifted. How lovely of us! How kind.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
We recap the Bob Backlund Man Mountain Rock shenanigans, which is a nice reprieve from all the foot talk. And by nice reprieve, I mean this is just as bad. So Man Mountain Rock, according to Vince, it rocked down the house last week. It's the same house we're watching this week. It's still standing. I see a flaw in your declaration. Then we get that weird Backlund freak out where they did him one take and didn't bother to shoot a second one because I guess he had to pay Bob twice or something.
Yeah, they just said, oh, we'll just play the same bit again.
So Man Mountain Rock cuts a promo from backstage where he's basically trying to play the dude and Walter at the same time.
Why are you harshing my buzz, man?
You know, I don't believe you, Bob Backlund. You know, I don't care what your political platform is, man. What you did to my guitar, that's my soul, man. If you wanted to get my attention, Bob, you got
it. It's weird how last week he was crying about his guitar, and this week he just seems, like you say, like the dude.
It's just can't believe what Bob has done. This is apparently going to be... This is your money drawing feud.
This company does not know how to draw money at the moment.
You know how to draw money if you gave him a pen. Adam Bomb versus Bill Payne. God, this is just the second match we're on now.
Yay! Adam Bomb.
He won't be around much longer, don't worry.
Oh, but he's so good!
He's all right.
What will we do every week without my ramblings about how good Adam Bomb is and how we should be building the company around him, damn it?
Just shift it to, Fatu when we get to September.
Oh, no.
He's making a difference. Or Aldo Montoya, or, I don't know, Avatar.
I'll get behind Avatar.
Okay. So, Payne jumps Bomb before the bell. Doesn't work out for him. Bomb takes over. As Vince and Lars spend his entire match discussing this Brett Lawler angle over the weekend, where Brett lost by count out to Henry Godwin because Lawler provided the distraction. I really want to see this show now. Oh boy.
Well, it was a nice departure from talking about feet for 30 seconds.
Well, funny you should mention that, Tom, because the
funny feet
talk does come back up after Bomb hits a nice standing drop kick. Lawler mentions he name drops by name the APA.
Ah, yes!
And I'm thinking, is he going to pay the APA to make this show better? No. He's guessing the American Podiatrist Association.
I'm glad you wrote APA and got excited as well. Like, a Farouk and Bradshaw finally discovered the secrets of time travel.
My head snapped up like a dog hearing something in the distance. Like, what? APA? What?
John, the acolytes as time travelers, please.
One point 21 gigawatts. Damn.
Ron and John's excellent adventure.
Oh, that'd be tremendous. Doing history lessons.
What would they go back and change? This whole bloody thing. I mean, maybe they did change time and we don't know it. Maybe.
How can we tell?
Maybe the Jerry Lawler Bret Hart match was meant to be a kiss my ballsack match, and they convinced them to go with foot instead. But maybe we don't know that.
It's a kid's show.
So? No. The joke is he would have had a bag full of footballs and tennis balls. Kiss my ballsack.
You mean Adam Bomb's unsold footballs he threw into the crowd?
Yes, although the fact that there are some unsold, I refuse to believe, because they are the height of merchandise mania for me.
I can think of at least 100 things that are better.
What? Right, I will not stand.
A gallon of Shane's sweat.
Why the hate? Why the bitterness towards Adam Bomb?
Adam Bomb shouldn't be a hero.
Why the French cries for Adam Bomb?
Adam Bomb should be a reprehensible villain.
Why?
A radioactive beast.
Why? But he's not. He's
for nothing.
He's using his power for good.
He's using his nuclear. Oh, he's like a Mr. Burns or a baby face.
Yes. He's using his nuclear energy to stop the bad guys. He's like Spider-Man.
Well, during all this Balder Dash, we learned that Razor is now questionable for the tournament Sunday.
Oh, that's because that's the one thing this show really does need, that the pay-per-view does need, is possibly one of the big stars from it not being able to make it.
Yeah, it's this show is tragic in hindsight.
It really is.
Diving really? Clothesline finishes, Bomb wins. It might be his last win ever, as far as we know.
No!
We get the King of the Ring report where we learn that Todd's a proud member of the Bomb Squad.
See, yes!
That's how you know Bomb sucks. That's how you know he sucks. It's Todd.
Todd being in the fan club is something that we've tried to sort out. Like, we have tried to remove him from the ledger, but he keeps adding himself back in.
We changed the locks.
We've changed the locks to stop him coming to the AGBSM, the annual General Bomb Squad meeting. But he keeps finding a way in. Like, he's bringing the good name of the club down. I, for one, have struck the record to maybe have him killed.
Well, Adam Bomb won't be at King of the Ring, but his brother, this show will, is going to be there.
Hey, maybe if Razor can't make it, we'll have Adam Bomb versus Yokozuna.
So Bomb could lose again? Sure.
Oh, no, have Bomb beat Yoko. Have Bomb beat Yoko. That'd be amazing. The nuclear bomb. Oh, actually, probably not a great
You know how
message.
I know Bomb would lose that match? You know how I know he would lose? Because his opponent has theme music.
Stop being mean to Adam Bomb.
In one guy with music that he ever beat, you can't do it.
I can't think of any.
If Bill Payne had just come out whistling something, he would have won the match.
No! He's Wesley!
Oh my god, it's the Harlem Globetrotters theme. I'm screwed now. My kryptonite.
If Bill Bay came out whistling. Oh, all this hate to Adam Bomb. Poor bastard.
I hate Adam Bomb. I'm just saying he was.
I just really dislike him.
Right, I'm okay, I am semi-serious, right?
With a tear in my eye and my tongue in my cheek, I'm semi-serious. Like, this roster in 95, right, it is fucking shite, right? Find me, like, why not Adam Bomb? Why Volkov over Adam Bomb?
I do agree with you there.
Yes!
I do agree with you there. But it's just... They made their bed. They made him a baby face. They made him, you know, smiling, happy guy who leaks radiation.
Yes.
And throws many.
This is the company that has a bin man. Why is Radiation Man so weird?
Dude, if Duke Tracy does not appear on BTE for a skit that mocks WWE, then what are we even doing?
I'd like that. And then I'd like an Adam Bomb push.
Well, speaking of trash and things that bombed, it's because of the King of the Ring.
Stop it.
No. This is, see, I was doing a name pun, Tom. Relax.
Stop it! Leave him alone! Leave my boy alone!
It's not Britney Spears, knock it off.
Leave Adam Bomb alone!
Although Britney did have a song called Toxic, so.
Exactly! She loves him!
God, the parallels are mind-blowing.
Leave Adam Bomb alone!
Todd runs down this this Carter threatening to show us.
It is a threat. It is they go to prison for threats this less antagonizing.
This is the I'll turn the car around of shows. Hang on, Tom's gonna spit something up here. Don't do it, Tom. You're in front of equipment.
Okay. I'll make us watch King of the Ring. All right, we'll be good. I'll turn this car around.
Can I just do Hard Labor instead?
It is quite literally a go home show, as in, we will go home.
So we get Diesel and Bigelow versus Sid Tatanka. Yeah.
Christ, that's your main. That's your main, that is. That's like getting a packet of biscuits for your main course.
It's more low main because it's limp. Will Diesel's elbow be ready? Find out.
Christ!
Foot match. We go back to Lawler, who now has two rubber feet. Double your pleasure. Lawler is just completely off his chain here.
I mean, Lawler's having a nice time.
He's as medicated as I wish I was. Then Lawler cuts a promo during the King of Ring report about with his two feet. Then one's Stu's foot, one's Helen's foot. Look how wrinkly it is. Look how the hammer does on this one. That went on for 90 seconds. They are filling. But not filling us with hope, mind you. We get a pretty straightforward Brett promo. Gonna make Lawler kiss his own foot. Did it as serious as he possibly could. And punctuates by calling him a slime ball. Okay, then.
Thanks, Brett.
And then we get the brackets. Mabel Taker, Sean Kama, Holly Roddy, and Razor if cleared versus Yoko.
Oh, I hope Razor makes it. Because I don't know what will happen in the tournament if he doesn't.
So we get to this King of the Ring. See what happens.
Stay tuned for partial excitement.
Possible excitement.
Partial.
Even then, that's over-promoting it.
You buy the seats, you won't need any of it. Because you don't want to go.
Stay tuned for occurrences.
Stay tuned for the King of the Ring has been described by critics as a pay-per-view that's on this Sunday.
Is nouns will verb.
It's been described as a thing that's happening.
So we come to what is ostensibly the feature match of this week.
Yes!
Psycho Sid and Tatanka versus the Head Shrinkers. In the meantime, we have Barry the Dud. Selling us a diesel power t-shirt where Nash points at you.
Now,
like Uncle Sam.
Now, it's actually one of the better t-shirts he's tried to flog us.
What?
In recent... It's better than some of the shite that he's put in our face.
Okay, well, I'm compared to that, sure.
It looks... It's very 90s chic, but it is the best t-shirt that he's tried to sell us.
Okay, it's not terrible, but then he goes like, well, let me show you the back. On the back, there's nothing except for the WF logo up by the cervical collar.
Well done, Barry. Look at the black. Look at the back. Look at the back. All our hopes and dreams are on the back.
I say, looking at that shirt, what I'll say this Sunday about the show, I see a void.
I wish we could avoid. This King of the Ring watch along with Sam is going to be absolutely hilarious. You know what? I'm looking at when we're going to record it. I think I'm just going to get really pissed.
Okay.
I think we should just start. I know it's 9:30 in the morning for you when we record it, but it'd be early in the morning. I don't know if it'd be 9:30, but either way, it'd be early in the morning. I think we just get pissed.
I don't drink, but it's.
I'll
just get really hostile and make jokes.
Just get hostile.
I can do that. I'm good at
Excellent.
That.
Excellent.
Let's see here. Shrinkers have no Alpha or Captain Lou with them because they were smart enough to get the hell out of here before King of the Ring.
No, so what the crack here is there's been some mix-ups with managers and stuff and touring schedules. So WWF are desperate to save money, so they're only sending managers on certain runs, on certain TV appearances and all pay-per-views, but only a handful of TV appearances and no house shows. They're trying to save money. The only manager exempt from this is Ted DiBiase and Paul Bearer.
Well, funny you should say that because I think this is the last appearance of the Head Shrinkers as the Head Shrinkers. And thus that would be the end of Lou and Alpha anyway.
Oh, well, that makes sense. We do get a little teaser as to what's to come in this match.
Oh, yes. We have the future Rikishi dancing around shaking his ass.
I wonder if the moment he did that moonwalk away from Sid... that his fate was sealed.
And as Vince said, he's got to be the Sultan.
I see a Sultan.
So the best part is when this was the unequivocal highlight of the show. When Sioni and Fatu are taking their stuff off in the ring, remember they're the baby faces. They find this good looking woman in the crowd. Now they will always put the camera on a good looking woman. Because that's just policy. It's like, you know, it's like, see, attractive women enjoy our shows. So therefore, you don't have to feel uncool for watching this.
It's not just spotty rejects. It is actual women.
Exactly. And it's like, they're as surprised as you are to see them in the crowd. So they pan in on her, but she's given an emphatic thumbs down. So they cut away immediately.
Oh.
This is a tape show. This is a tape show. This is a tape show. And they've somehow screwed that up.
They get one shot, one take. They ain't got time to edit it.
I think they're just happy to find that woman there. and like, really? You enjoy this crap? Like, we expect geeks with big glasses and wrestling t-shirts to show up and watch this, but not someone like you. What are you doing here? So, meanwhile, we get more smelly foot jokes. As Vince says, he feels sorry for the first 15 rows of the King of the Ring crowd. I feel bad for all of them.
I feel bad for every row at that show.
Exactly. Oh, Vince is just like playing slow pitch softball here with the jokes he's setting up. So, the thing about this match, Sid and Tatanka are main eventing Sunday. Sid has a little bit of hope. Tatanka is not seen as a main event guy on any level. The Million Dollar Corporation is a bunch of weenies. They really are. So during this match, shouldn't you have them just beat the living crap out of the Head Shrinkers and leave them for dead?
If the Head Shrinkers are on the way out, then yeah.
So what do we get here? We get a 50-50 match. with Hedgemakers makes Sid look stupid at a bunch of points.
Yeah, that was a surprising turn of events, if this is a team that you're no longer keeping around. Whether or not by this point they made the decision that they weren't keeping them around, though, is questionable. Whether they want to try and keep them strong just in case.
Nonetheless, Sid's main eventing this show coming up.
Could you not just put them in there with two job lads and just had them mow through them?
Well, it's...
Do you think that would have been better? I feel like that would have been better. You just have two jobbers in there that Tatanka and Sid just rip shreds off for 2 minutes.
You want to have him be someone with credibility, though. That's the thing.
Mm.
Like a modicum of credibility. Maybe like a Bob Holliday. If I have him be two heavyweights, then you're saying, hey, they could beat Diesel and Bam Bam because they're two heavyweights.
Yeah.
Or two 300-pound guys.
I mean, they win clean.
Clean enough. So Sid does the noggin knocker on both Hedgemakers. That doesn't work. And they start clowning him, which is great heading for Sunday. Fatu gives us the great Fatu clothesline sell where he does the midair cartwheel that I always love. How he does that, I have no idea. Then Vince goes on about how Diesel's playing in a charity softball game this weekend. Isn't he injured?
Oh, yeah.
Unless his elbow, elbow being held together with chewing gum and duct tape.
Unless he's throwing the opening pitch or something.
Well, even then, it's like because Vince has to mention every celebrity who's there, Troy Aikman of the Dallas Cowboys, and all these people giving Diesel the rub through celebrity academia here. That's been going on for a while.
Mm.
Like here's Diesel having his photo taken with name of celebrity here, name of celebrity here. Just they're doing everything they can to Hoganize him, and it is not working.
Because there is an important X factor, not that one, that they're missing from this whole thing, and that is any tiny shred of cool, of intimidating, of energy, of enthusiasm. None of that. You're putting him in all the right places. You're putting the round peg in the round hole, but there's just no passion that you don't get any fire from him. There's no passion. It was never just about putting Hulk Hogan next to a celebrity. It was never just about putting John Cena next to a celebrity, because they were guys that could carry that and look big in that situation. And Diesel, we know he's a funny guy. We know he's a charismatic guy. He's had all of that stripped away. He just looks like a wet fart in all of these circumstances. Just looks wet. Like, imagine the cool Kevin Nash that we'd see in the late 90s in WCW doing all this celebrity stuff. Like, dicking about, going to throw the opening pitch and then sort of faking it and then go, oh, I didn't throw it really. Just being a dick. Like, imagine that had been the best thing ever. It really would. But we don't get that because Vince wants this clean-cut babyface to run his company. And it just doesn't work. It's not working.
And the dumb part is, I mean, I know softball isn't the most grueling game in the world, but you're trying to sell this. If Sid drops him one more time, it could be the end of his career. Oh, he's playing softball on Saturday with all these celebrities.
Yes, exactly.
Pick one.
You can do one or the other. It's just infuriating. So
if that's not enough of an irritation, we get one of my favorite Vince bits where he tries to over babyface the show. We see a fan holding a sign that says Sid rules the world. Okay, so someone like Sid, whatever. Some people like the heels, it happens. And Vince insists that DiBiase must have paid that fan to hold that sign up.
No, they just don't. They don't like anyone other than Sid.
No, it's just, I can't believe that those who kicked their ass for a while, 95. I really can't. So, Sid does a spot here where he misses a leg drop. Now, usually you recoil, you grab your leg, you grab your ass, whatever hits the mat at a funny angle. He just sits there like he froze like a stone. Like he forgot what he's supposed to do. Like he glitched. Like he's buffering. And he's just waiting to continue. That part made me laugh. I don't know why, because Sid just...
It was like he broke very briefly.
I think the best word to describe Sid is inexplicable.
Undefinable. I am undefinable! And he has half the brains that you do.
Exactly. Fatu has been in this entire time. He finally tags Sione. Sione beats up Tatanka for a while. Tatanka almost got pinned accidentally on a top rope straddle. Because referee had really hold up going down for three. Tatanka had to want to get the shoulder up. Nice overt moment. I'll say this much. Sione the Barbarian gets a great pile driver on Tatanka at one point. Looked nice.
There were some nice bits in here.
Well, because you have guys who kind of know what they're doing. Then Sid hits his bad clothesline and knocks Sione over the ropes. That was a little dodgy looking. He powerbombs Fatu and then badly throws him to the ropes in order to knock him out of the ring. Sid's on autopilot, I think. I can't blame him. Then Sid goes to the floor, powerbombs Sione outside, throws him in, and Tatanka pins him. These are your threats.
This is the oncoming onslaught for Diesel and Bam Bam Bigelow, the team that eked out a win over the Head Shrinkers.
This took 10 minutes.
They've measured it so wrong. Mm-hmm. So wrong.
Yeah. Measure twice, cut once, regret it for a year afterwards.
Stitching time saves nine.
So then we get some Diesel Sid footage highlighting Diesel's elbow injury that he got either playing. Oh, that's why he's playing softball, because he's mocking Sid.
is this a long game? Like a long insult?
Yes, this is very Joker-esque on Diesel's part. Want to know how I got this softball injury? My father was a pitcher.
He hit me with a sponge.
And so then I book this show and he goes, "Why so delirious?"
John! Thank you,
Diesel's
John.
Diesel's the Joker.
Yes. Then tag Kevin Nash in it.
No, don't do that.
Do that.
Let's stop with the snitchy stuff here.
Never snitches get stitches.
And Diesel's gotten a few in the elbow.
Exactly.
So Vince is yelling about adversity during this video because Diesel were highlighting the way his elbow hit the mat on the chokeslam and powerbomb. We get the whole setup for this match at King of the Ring. And then we cut to Diesel and Bam Bam. The heroes, the protagonists in this story.
Oh, my God.
All right, gentlemen, it's this Sunday night, and you just saw Native American Tatanka and Psycho Sid in action. You must be wondering to yourself, Big Daddy Cool, you must be wondering, am I going to be on the receiving end of a powerbomb? You just saw one by Big Sid, and if so, will the elbow split wide open? What happens if you are powerbombed once again this coming Sunday night?
Well, I've taken one and I survived it. Though I was injured, I'm sure I can withstand another one, but that's not going to happen, that's for sure.
Well, you were certainly disappointed, and the medical officials not allowing you to wrestle this past weekend. Bam Bam Bigelow, you were disappointed in that as well. Nonetheless, you picked up the slack. Well, who's going to be picking up the slack for whom, if it's necessary, in the tag match this coming Sunday night?
Well, you know, Vince, what I know about the Million Dollar Corporation and Ted DiBiase, and what Big Daddy knows about Sid, you know, the only thing I see is a lot of positive energy. We got the
Pardon
right
me,
attitude.
Gentlemen, but I detect a bit of lack of confidence here on your part.
No, there's no lack of confidence. Confidence is what we have. What we have to deal with is Big Daddy's injury. I know his arm's hurting, you know, but, you know, I wrestle Big Daddy Cool, and I know what he's got. He's got heart. I got heart. We got the heart. We got what it takes, and we're going to take it to him.
All right, thank you very much for joining us, and best of luck.
They're both wearing their own shirts, and Diesel's wearing a white hat. This is World Wrestling Federation.
Jesus, just they look like goons. Just goons.
He looks like Super Dave lounging around the house. Keeps his hat on.
Vince is in the room with them for this.
Yes.
You can tell because of the acoustics. Like, you can hear Vince's voice bouncing off the walls in the room. Like, I know they're playing it off like, hey, let's cut to them now. No, Vince is in the room with you.
And
you can tell.
This is like Ed Wood.
Yeah, it is Ed Woodian to see that.
That was perfect.
It was
maybe the world champion would wear a lousy hat.
Vince would.
Who wouldn't?
We all won't.
Vince shouldn't. So Diesel could not be, can't be bothered.
He this really be, can't.
He's got the shirt, he's got the hat, and he's questioning what he's doing with his life at this point. He calmly assures that he could survive another power bomb, while Bigelow discusses positive energy. And then Vince calls both of them out on their lack of confidence, which I wrote in permanent for these enthusiasm.
Yeah, Vince saying, like, come on, lads, put some pep in it. Come on.
I've made this joke 800 times on the in the history of this podcast, but I'm going to make it again. This was the crusty poses for trading card photo of promos.
It really was. There's so many of these. Jesus. Give me a Coke-fueled Hogan Warrior promo. Dear exactly. God. Dear God. Give me one of those blistering promos that made little to no sense, but my God, whatever they were selling, you were buying. Like, you give me one of them.
You know what this promo was? It was contractually obligated.
It was a contractually obligated promo to push a match.
Yes.
Jesus. Like, Jerry Lawler gets 300 run-ups at the Kiss My Foot promo.
They at least he tried.
60 seconds. At least, yeah. For all the faults that we give to Lawler constantly banging on about the Kiss My Foot match, at least he gave it socks every time, pun intended, every time he talked about it. These two, Christ, crusty poses for trading card photo, as you said, just could not be. These are your two top baby faces. And they look like they're waiting for a bus. All the energy of somebody in the queue at JCPenney to return a toaster.
Sounds like an MRI. They have to be perfectly still the entire time.
Jesus! I get that Diesel and Bammers didn't get along that well behind the scenes. I get it. But Christ, lads, just Pagliacci face it up and sell the bloody pay-per-view.
Here to sell the pay-per-view is Jerry the King of Lawler at his apparent castle. Because he has these medieval torture devices all around.
All neatly labeled as to what they are. Here I am in my dungeon. Are you sure, mate?
See, I briefly got excited here because I'm thinking instead of a Kiss My Foot match, it's going to be like an FMW-style death match with all these weapons used. We get a torture rack in there, which... is he signaling on the line for Lex Luger? Call the hotline to find out. We got like the chair of torture, but not the one that Abdullah sat in. Basically, he goes on about torture, and he's gonna torment Brett at the pay-per-view. Sadly, he didn't bring any of this stuff with him. That could have been fun.
I'll bet you peons are wondering just exactly where you are. Well, I thought I'd invite you on a personal tour of my little dungeon of torture. Take a look at this little jewel. I'd like to invite each and every one of you to have a seat sometimes. Or over here, can you imagine the torture of being locked into this, huh? But that's nothing compared to the torture that 8 men are going to put themselves through in the King of the Ring tournament just to be called an imposter king, because I'm the real king. Take a look at this. Look at the name here. It's called the Fall Brett, or Falling Board. It was a forerunner to the guillotine. Ooh, and it's so appropriate because of the name. It reminds me of you, Bret Hart, and it reminds me that you're going to have to fall down on your hands and knees after I beat you at King of the Ring. And you're going to have to kiss my royal feet. Take a look at this rack, Bret Hart. Do you see this? I promise you would rather be on the rack than have to kiss my feet. Oh, sure, I got my boots on now. That's because I'm letting those corns and bunions and calluses fester and grow until the King of the Ring. And in front of the entire world, you're going to have to pucker up and kiss my stinking royal feet.
I think this is just filler because it's like, goddamn, we're still short this week, pal. I know, put in that torture promo that Lawler had.
So this would have been filmed, yeah, as you say, probably at the same time as the horse one, at some sort of museum or some sort of like London dungeon type affair, it feels like.
And he went to a Renaissance fair?
Quite possibly.
Triple H versus Buck Quartermain. I'm sorry, Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley. And journeyman jobber Buck Quartermain.
Hunter wants to know that if Buck wins this match, that he and Buck were never at war with one another. Mm. It was an imaginary war.
So
Hunter is still Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the aristocratic American blue blood at this point. Vince, meanwhile, can't imagine somebody reveling and having a body part get kissed as punishment. Perish the thought. Get a little bit of chain wrestling here. Hunter corners Quartermain and gives him a wicked chop. A really loud gunshot, like chop. Just a basic match here to keep Hunter in the flow here. Nice tilt-the-world backbreaker at one point. He never really did for a while after this.
There's a couple of moves throughout his first couple of weeks that we don't see him ever do again. Tilt-a-world backbreaker.
He stopped doing the cutter already, as we'll see in a moment. We learned that next week we're going to have Jeff Jarrett versus Savio Vega for the Intercontinental title. Well, I mean, Savio's not doing anything on Sunday, so...
He'll be free as a bird. I don't think anything else he's doing on Sunday.
Hunter takes Quartermain.
Cheering on his mate Razor Ramon in the King of the Ring. That's what he'll be doing.
Exactly.
Wink.
Hunter takes Quartermain, pedigrees him. First time you see the pedigree on Raw and in that form. Although, instead of doing the hook one arm, hook the other arm, he just hooks both at the same time and then does the jump.
It's a nice tight jump as well.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know the origin of the pedigree?
Well, I know the original guy who did it in WWF was Outlaw Ron Bass.
It was indeed. But Triple H on the story of, on Fox, credits Killer Kowalski.
Really?
This is what Triple H says on the story of... Because I'd heard it was Ron Bass. And he says, Kowalski used to do a spot where he put a guy's head between his knees and he would jump up and just kind of jar their neck. It dawned on me that if he kept going straight down onto his knees, it was like a sort of version of a pile driver. And as I looked at it, I thought, well, if you held the guy's arms, it would very clearly be a pile driver. So it started out as that in my mind. I've always thought that it was something very unique that I'd never seen done before. It sort of slowly evolved into me hooking the arms behind the guy's back and then jumping up and having them come down full body face first. So there you go.
Well, Bass's version didn't hook the arms. It was just sort of like just using his weight to push your head down.
I think like the one Dustin Rhodes did a couple of times.
Dustin did it too.
I think Goldust did one like that, like a pedigree, a no-armed pedigree. Late in his WWE run, I'm sure he did.
Not quite remembering it.
I might be mistaken then. Isn't it interesting though? And big shout to former guest on the Cultaholic Classic Raw review, William R. Washington from RBR Wrestling, who put out a tweet to point this out. The finish is called the pedigree, and it was called the pedigree because it's part of the Hunter Hearst Helmsley gimmick, the blue blood posh man from Greenwich and the heritage and all that stuff. That's where the origin of the name comes from. But isn't it funny how that Triple H has been removed from the posh man gimmick for decades now, yet he is still, it's still called the pedigree, and he still hails from Greenwich, Connecticut.
I guess it just stuck.
Yeah, it's just funny how that's just something we've just kind of always just accepted. He might be from Minneapolis or something. I don't know.
He's from New Hampshire.
There you go.
Which is close to Connecticut anyway.
I just think it's funny how, like, it's obviously the name stuck, but it's funny how a name that was so associated with his gimmick, a gimmick that he no longer really adheres to, but the name of that finisher has stuck from it.
It's kind of like how Mick Foley, when he was Mankind, became Mr. Sacco at level with Mankind, but like, so why is he still called Mankind? What does that really have to do with this version of the Foley character?
Yeah, it didn't make any sense, did it?
Because before, you know, he was the sewer-dwelling atrocity who was who thought he mirrored Mankind, so he called himself Mankind. But now he's, I guess he still didn't represent Mankind, but in a positive way at that point.
But it evolved from there.
Kind of.
Is there anything that has stuck that you're unhappy that stuck? I'll give you an example. How the fact that there are still pundits and wrestling people who call a reverse DDT a slop drop.
What's wrong with that?
It annoys me a little bit because I feel like a reverse DDT is a cool sounding name. I feel like a slop drop's a really weird hangover.
You know what? You're right. It's not a slop drop. It's a gator breaker. From when Skinner did it.
I mean, that is better. Gator Breaker does sound far better.
Trying to think, is...
Did you prefer Backcracker or Backstabber?
Backstabber.
Backstabber.
It's much more vicious. It's like, I guess how Lashley does the Master Lock.
But it's called the Hurt Lock.
Well, it hurts, but it's also going to be masterful to do it.
You
know, it's funny you mention that because the other night we were watching Spring Stampede in the Discord. Spring Stampede 99. DDP hit the Diamond Cutter and someone yells RKO.
Oh, boo!
It's like classless.
Absolutely. I hope you ban them from the Discord.
I should.
You should ban them, block them.
So after
they're not allowed in my garden.
So Hunter wins. We get the Jarrett Savio promo for next week to really bring it home. Then we get the confession booth promo from the previous year. Now, for those of you who don't know what we're talking about, there's an ad where a young woman goes into a confessional booth. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. She's apparently had impure thoughts of Sean and Brett and Razor because they're handsome men. And she feels unfaithful to her husband. Meanwhile, the older, wizened priest is busy watching WWF on a small TV monitor, watches going on and on. And then she says, like, is there anything I could do? And he says something along the lines of, oh, I think we can do something, or that could be arranged or something along those lines. And it ends with the WWF, put your faith in us.
The WWF, where priests will have sex with you.
Yes.
That was the message they were sent in.
So we come out of that, and this is one of the weirdest things I've seen on this show so far. Apparently, somehow, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert, perhaps the two most famous film critics that have ever lived, saw this commercial. I don't know where they would have seen it, if it would have aired at like a film festival, if it would have aired, I don't know where it would have aired, but apparently they both bashed it. So Vince went on this passive aggressive tirade on the show about how Siskel and Ebert are basically Beavis and Butthead and don't know what they're talking about. You talk about insecure.
He is so thin-skinned some days, is Vince.
Yeah.
He is so insecure.
That's an ad they aired like 8 months ago. And they dusted it off just so Vince can make a point about Siskel and Ebert.
He just can't help himself, can he? He just cannot help himself.
No, he can't.
God.
So we come to, I guess, the real main event of this show. Shawn Michaels versus one of my favorite names in wrestling history, Gus Kontorakis.
What he sounds like a badass. If ever there was somebody that needed to drop their first name, I know WWE loves
absolutely,
doing it.
Absolutely.
Kontorakis.
What's his first name? Gus.
Vince could make money off of a guy called Kontorakis.
But Gus is the guy you buy bloodworms from before you go fishing.
Kontorakis is the guy that fishes with your body.
He fishes with a hand grenade. Kontorakis.
Oh, he's just a great... Kontorakis is all set for Retribution 2.0 in 2021. That is a far cooler name than Slapjack, T-Bar and Mace. Kontorakis! Get in Retribution. Get in my boy stable, Kontorakis.
Kontorakis is like a German metal band name.
Kontorakis.
Now with the lead single Bleeding Oozing Wounds, here's Kontorakis.
Guten Abend, vs. Kontorakis. Blah, blah, blah.
My love is ticking clock berserker.
My love is like dump truck berserker. Just blood pouring down from the stage.
Yes. Mid-show crucifixion. You know how it goes.
Undertaker versus Kontorakis. I buy that pay-per-view.
And then, so what happened then? Well, then they opened for Lisa Loeb and it was a nightmare.
Loeb was far too...
Two different audiences.
You're right. Lisa Loeb was far too rock and roll.
Yes, of course. I like Lisa Loeb.
You say, I want to hear what I want to. She's nice.
Turn the radio on. Turn the radio up.
She's promoting the radio. I liked her. Exactly. Is she due a comeback soon? Everyone's due a comeback soon.
She should. What's Lisa Loeb? She wears her glasses.
Let me find her on here. Let me see if she's on the Twitters.
So Shawn Michaels has his sleazy 5 o'clock shadow going, which was a good look for him.
It's a strong look. He looks like a star. And the pop from them and the Heat Machine is amazing.
Yeah. He's like a more metalish version of Billy Ray Cyrus at this point. Just a good look for 1995. Just a star appearance. He rides Gus on the mat for a good laugh, you know, slaps him on the butt while riding on his back, just mocking him. So then Lawler implies, I'm sorry, Vince implies that Lawler's going to commit suicide if he loses on Sunday. Did you hear that part?
I was a little bit, it shocked me a little bit to talk about this sort of nonsense.
It's almost like you're going to end it all on Sunday if you're unable to beat Bret Hart. It's like, the hell?
Like, no, I'm just going to, if I lose, then I lose. I'm not going to kill myself.
The man's playing left foot, right foot with prosthetic feet covered in scab. and you're talking about a possible life ending. What was the meaning like for this show?
Confusing.
We get a spot where Sean, being very cheeky, jumps in the front row to revel with the fans. Kind of funny, actually. Fans seem to love it.
I liked it. He's just character and charisma personified. He just stands out from everything else we've seen tonight.
So what you're saying is it would be a very bad idea if Vince were to do to him what he did to Diesel and then neuter him, character-wise.
That'd be the worst thing to do. And I know, I'm sure Vince won't.
Listen, 1 year from now, we'll see. So call the hotline to find out who's going to replace Razor Ramon. That's right, squeeze some money out of the dumb kids. You have allowance money. You got piggy banks. Break them open. but Vince suggests that surely Razor's going to be there anyway. So let's bait and switch them up to the very end. People want to see Razor, make sure they buy the show.
I mean, if I feel bad for the handful of people that were like, I can't bear the thought of Bret Hart versus Jerry Lawler in a Kiss My Foot match, but I like Razor Ramon, and he's going to be there, so I'm going to pay for this pay-per-view.
I mean, with the way Vince is selling it, I want to show this match to Matt Hardy today and have him echo, God, what a carny.
if Matthew thinks you're a carny, you know there's problems.
Money Matt, not Matt out of character, of course. Matt Hardy.
I'm with you. I know. I think.
Of course. So, Kantarakis gets in some offense.
There he is.
But then on the floor, a superkick knocks out Kantarakis. I love this name. So Gus gets laid out with a kick. That is the biggest contrast between awesome first name and I mean bad first name and awesome last name ever.
Gus Kantarakis.
Shouldn't his first name be like Stone?
Stone Kantarakis. No, his first name should be Kantarakis.
And last name should be Kantarakis.
Yes! Kantarakis! What's your brother's name? What's your brother's name? Luigi Mario.
He was the Kelly Kelly of his day.
Kantarakis. Coming out and dancing on the stage.
Dr. Zayas. Kantarakis.
Kantarakis. Kantarakis.
Oh, Kantarakis.
Put the belt on this man.
So anyway, so Sean rolls him in after that kick on the floor. Crowd chants, one more time. So Sean says, really, one more time? So he hits him with a following kick, which I think is a metaphor here for him wrestling at Crown Jewel.
Yeah.
He ended on a good note. Do it again. All right, one more time. And that's not as memorable this time.
I like the bounce off the ropes that he does with it.
Yeah, you got a little spring on it. A
little spring off and a buff. Little super kick. Nice.
A little thrust kick there, and then he gets a sitting pin because he's Mr. Cool Cat. Mr. Cool Guy.
A cool finish.
And so Sean wins, and out comes Kama.
Kantarakis. Kantarakis can handle himself. He doesn't need Kama out there.
Well, Kama runs in, so Sean dispatches him in short order because Sean plays it cool. Kama's on the floor. They're jawing at each other. Out lumbers the Undertaker, who's not only a tournament entrant, but also hates Kama for stealing his urn and making a chain out of it. These are important issues to have.
They are. But on the plus side, it brings us to a point where Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker, about a decade, just over a decade until they headline WrestleMania, are in the same ring at the same time.
You realize that Sean, Taker, and Hunter all wrestled on this show?
Wow, they did, didn't they?
So this show's historic, and it's in spite of its shittiness.
And Adam Bomb. And Kantarakis. All the big players are here. I don't know why they had a problem in 95. The roster seems fine.
If Adam Bomb had been in that match in Mania 20, it'd have been the end of an era.
Boy, stop it. Leave him alone.
So then Mabel lumbers out. It's like, could he win the tournament? Oh, perish the thought.
Oh, no, he won't. He'll be out in the first round, surely.
So then the tournament, the show comes to an end. Get the last hard smell for the Kiss My Foot match. And then that's it. That's our show.
And that is the show. Jeez. It is the flattest go home. It is, as you said, the I Will Turn This Cart Around show.
In spite of Contour Ruckus.
Despite a last gasp from Contour Ruckus to turn this show around. He doesn't quite literally turn this show around. But King of the Ring, are you buzzing for the worst pay-per-view that the WWF ever put on?
We shall endure.
Oh, we certainly shall. And you will endure it with us. It'll be myself, Justin Henry, and the ever-fragrant Sam Driver joining us for a watch-along of awful proportions. And next week, we will crown the winner of this special cassette tape, WWF Superstar Slam Jam. If you aren't feeling the torture enough, then you will find out on the watch-along who wins this cassette. So if you fancy this and a bunch of Cultaholic-shaped goodies as well, simply go over to Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review. Say something nice about the podcast. Put something funny in there that maybe we'll appreciate. And once you do that, drop me a message on Twitter, via email, or whatever to show that you've done it. And next week, we will pick a winner and somebody will get this cassette. You lucky devils.
Second prize, we just spit on you.
Second prize, we burn your house down. If you want to give us an Apple Podcast 5-star review, do so. Let me know you've done it. You can win yourself this Superstar Slam Jam cassette and some other bits and pieces. And then tell us about it. Where? Well, he's at JRHWriting on Twitter. I am at Tom Campbell on Twitter. We are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Lisa Loeb is on Cameo.
Ooh.
For £96, she will do you a hello. Or for £3, she'll send you a text message. You say... Love you, bye!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.